Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Hurad Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Malabha Giribada Dhauri Gopijana Malabha Giribada Dhauri Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Malabha Giribada Dhauri Gopijana Malabha Giribada Dhauri Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jai Hurad Amadhava Kunja Bihari Jai Hurad Umadhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Padabahansa Paravitakacharya Also Teda Satashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chanana Adavaktabhananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kichai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kichai Ananda Koti Vaishna Vrinda Kichai Namacharya Shidhavidas Thakur Kichai Param Se Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidhveda Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kichai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Govardhan, Sayam Kunda, Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturanam Kijai, Nabadiptam Kijai, Jagannatha Swami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Srimati Tulasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Om Gana Timidandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshuram Miritam Yena Tusmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we'll continue with our study of the Bhagavad Gita. And here we go. Bhagavad Gita. And, of course, this is the 18th text in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So we're going very quickly through the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we're going to start going a little slower now that we're getting to the philosophical part of the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll continue. Anantavanta hime deha nisyasyokta shariranaha anashino prameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bharata Anantavanta, perishable. He may all these deha, material bodies, that yasya, eternal and existence, uktaha, are said, sarirana, of the embodied soul, anashana, never to be destroyed, a Pramayasha, immeasurable, Tasmat, therefore, Yudhyashva, fight, Bharata, O descendant of Bharata. Translation, the material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata. And Prabhupada explains the material body is perishable by nature. It may perish immediately, or it may do so after 100 years. It is a question of time only. There is no chance of maintaining it indefinitely. But the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by an enemy, to say nothing of being killed. So, of course, I'm just one funny thing is that years ago, they had this whole procedure where you could sign up to have your body cryogenically frozen. You know, it's more than just frozen. It's you put in liquid nitrogen or something like that. And they said that after some time, when they discover whatever killed you, the cure for whatever killed you, they're going to be able to defrost you and bring you back to life. And even one great personality named Walt Disney had this done to him. And I think somehow the electricity went off and he got defrosted prematurely. So anyway, as mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have any idea how to measure its dimension. So from both viewpoints, there is no cause of lamentation because the living entity, as he is, cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved for any length of time or permanently protected. The minute particle, the whole spirit, acquires this material body according to his work. That's karma. And therefore, observance of religious principles should be utilized. Why? To get rid of the karma. By chanting Hare Krishna, even Namabhash accidentally, jokingly, whatever, then karma gets eradicated. So that's the advantage of religious principles, or say spiritual principles. Because sometimes people take the word religion to mean, you know, I believe in one thing, you believe in another thing, you know, what's the truth? But we're talking about eternal principles. The exact expression in Sanskrit is called Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan means eternal. Dharma means the actual constitution of something. And Srila Prabhupada would often give the example that the Dharma of fire is heat. So that's part of the constitution of fire, you know, normal fire. So anyway, so the part of our constitution, or realizing our constitution, is called, our eternal constitution is called Sanatan Dharma. And realizing our temporary constitution in the Vedic literature is called Varnashram Dharma. Really easy to understand. Varnashram means whatever modes of nature happen to be affecting our particular body, we function accordingly. Okay. In the Vedanta Sutras, the living entity is qualified as light. I am light, because he is part and parcel of the supreme light. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. So, of course, that doesn't mean we are just simply light, and we merge into the light, but we exude light more brilliant than many 10,000 times the sun. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore, it is the spirit soul which maintains this body. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily considerations. You know, Prabhupada would often talk about that, you know, we have someone we love very much, and as soon as they leave the body, I mean, it's just whatever. I mean, certain religions, they bury the body. Other religions, they may even throw the body to vultures. In other religions, they may burn the body. So there's so many different things that are done with the body, but the person doesn't continue to exist. And certainly, at the time of judgment, that body does not rise again. I mean, I don't think I want my body to rise again. That would be a disaster. If I have to take birth again, I will get a nice young body where I can serve Krishna. But I don't want this body to rise again, particularly as an old man. So the body, that's why we can cremate the body. Actually, this is a very interesting point. Why is the cremation of the body done in the Vedic system? Interesting question. The reason for that is, first of all, it saves space, you know, and it's very antiseptic to do that. But secondly, that the soul, accompanied by the subtle body, is very attached to this gross body. And if you don't believe that you're very attached to this gross body, look in a mirror and see, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the prettiest sannyasi of them all, if you're going to be a sannyasi. So just look in a mirror, and you're identifying with the body. So let us say you leave the body, not just let us say when you leave the body, then you're actually looking at the body. Hey, that's me. Just like when we go through Facebook, we always look for pictures of ourselves. Not everyone does that, but I'm speaking in general and rhetorical sense that we look for pictures of ourselves. Or you look at the photographic albums from when you were a child or your yearbook. I don't even know if they still have that at the university or the high school. And then that was me. Wow, look at, there's me. There's me, Joe, you know, as a young kid. Wow. It's not actually you, it's the body. So, anyway, so these bodies change, and when you leave the body, whatever state you leave it, the soul will be looking, the soul in this subtle material body, will be looking at that body, I guess hovering, and thinking, how can I leave it? And that's why, if you go to cemeteries, you will experience, if you're a little sensitive, ghosts hovering around cemeteries. One of the temples I am in charge of is in a city called New Orleans. New Orleans is famous for its cemeteries. In fact, they take tour groups, hundreds and hundreds of people. Not now, of course, but unusual times. They take hundreds of people to view the cemeteries, and if you go the cemetery, you actually feel the ghosts there. And New Orleans is also famous because it has many bars in a place called the French Quarter and many other illicit things going on. And you can actually feel the presence of all these subtle living entities who are attached to this world. So one way of helping the soul move on to the next body is by getting rid of the present body after the person dies. It's actually very useful for many different reasons. So that's why in the Vedic system, the body is burnt. That's also why that the archaeologists and anthropologists, when they do their digs in India, don't find too many bodies in ancient civilizations. Because high-class cultures, they would burn the bodies, cremate the bodies. So you're not going to find much. It makes sense, doesn't it? Whereas in the lower class cultures, they bury the bodies. And people go to where the body is. Person, of course, the person may be there as a ghost, but phew, it's kind of scary. So in any way, you go there and you worship at the grave or something like that. So what we usually do, someone leaves their body, they cremate the body, and they throw the ashes into a sacred river like the Ganges or the Yamuna. Or if you have a great saintly person, like Srila Prabhupada, the body is interred in the earth because that's considered sacred. But we understand, even with a great saintly person, they are not that body because the soul is different from the body, whether you're a saintly person or whether you are rascal number one. Okay, next verse. Ya'inam miti hantaram yaschayinam manyate hatam ubhautau na vijanito nayam hanti na hanyate ya. Anyone who, Avam, this, Beti, knows Hunturam, the killer, yah, anyone who, cha, also, evam, this, manute, thinks, hatam, killed, ubao, both, tau, they, na, never, bijanet, aha, are in knowledge, na, never, I am, this, hunti, kills, na, nor, hanyate, is killed. Neither he who thinks that the living entity, is a slayer, nor he who thinks it's slain, is in knowledge. For the self slays not, nor is slain. The same exact principle. I know Krishna keeps repeating himself about this, just to make the point. The body dies, the soul doesn't die. We're eternal. And Krishna approaches the same point from different angles of vision or different ways of expressing it in all these different verses in the second chapter. Generally, when we would go to funerals, we would recite the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as well as chanting the Lord's holy names, because this reminds everyone that the person continues living. For example, when I went to my father's funeral, I said, my father continues to live. Not in that particular body, but because he has done devotional service, he assisted me in different ways. Sometimes he gave donations or assisted me in giving things or helping in different ways or encouraging me in different ways in Krishna consciousness. I said that he has actually gone on to a much better destination. So this is generally what I talk about in funerals. And because someone is hearing the chanting of the holy name, even if the person has become a ghost, the person gets liberated from the body by hearing the chanting of the Lord's holy names. Once upon a time, this is a story about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that there was a ghost living in a tree, because ghosts sometimes live in trees too. They got, or in the walls of the house. I don't know why I'm talking about ghost stories now. But anyway, there was a ghost living in a tree, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur employed the father of a particular girl scholar in reading the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, and when he got finished with it, the tree crashed to the ground. Another story is when Srila Prabhupada was staying in John Lennon's estate in the UK, there was a ghost in one of the houses nearby, part of the estate. And Srila Prabhupada went into the house and kept knocking on the wall and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And the ghost went away. Another interesting story about Prabhupada and ghosts is that when Prabhupada wanted to buy a particular building in India, I think it was in Calcutta, or some other city. It's not important what city he was in. He found a building that was ghostly haunted, and therefore people really wanted to sell it at a low price, and Prabhupada took advantage, bought it at a low price, got rid of the ghosts, saved a lot of money. So if you ever want to buy a house or something at a low price, make a rumor that there's ghosts living there, and nobody will buy it except for you. Very good procedure. So neither you thinks the living entity is a slayer, nor thinks it's slain, is acknowledged, for the self slays not, nor is slain. Purport, when an embodied living entity is hurt by fatal weapons, it is to be known that the living entity within the body is not killed. The spirit soul is so small that it is impossible to kill him by any material weapon, as well as will be evident from subsequent verses. Nor is the living entity killable because of its spiritual constitution. What is killed or is supposed to be killed is the body only. This, however, does not at all encourage killing of the body. The Vedic injunction is Nehimshat Sarvabhutani. It's 9.4 Bhagavad Gita. Never commit violence to anybody. Nor does understanding that the living entity is not killed encourage animal slaughter. Killing the body of anyone without authority is abominable and punishable by the law of the state as well as by the law of the Lord. Arjuna, however, is being engaged in killing for the principle of religion and not whimsically. Now, not the principle of some religious war with terrorism or anything like that, but for bringing sanity back to the kingdom. Not to take over the kingdom, not to rule the kingdom, but to actually free the people from an oppressor. And that was Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. It's a little bit different situation. So it's not killing for religion. We're not encouraging that. The way we do things in Kali Yuga is we deal with the soul and the body. We don't engage in any sort of violence or any sort of killing. We actually destroy the demoniac mentality inside each and every one of our hearts by chanting the holy names. Now, talking about terrorists, there was a funny thing that Prabhupada said about terrorists that I was listening to 2 days ago when I was listening to one of his classes in the morning. One devotee asked, you know, what about terrorists, Srila Prabhupada? You know, because even at that time when Prabhupada was present, there were some terrorists, I guess, in India. And Prabhupada said that basically society, modern-day society, is a bunch of animals. And when you have a bunch of animals, you got to expect there's going to be some ferocious animals like tigers. If you go in the jungle, don't complain if a lion or a tiger attacks you. So in other words, because society is at such a low, low, low level, then you have things. And people are animals. I mean, people are simply engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, depending on nothing higher. It's just polished animal life. I mean, a pig may be eating in a trough. A trough is one of these like U-shaped things where they put the pig food in when you're raising pigs. Hopefully you're not raising pigs. But with pigs, so the pig may be eating out of the trough, slurping. And you may be eating out of fine china. But what is the difference? What is the difference? I mean, at least the pig is more ecological than you are. You know, he's not wasting some china, of course. And he reuses his bowl, and you throw away your styrofoam, but he never throws away his trowel. They just refill it again with whatever slop he's eating. So, you know, the principle is the same. And Prabhupada would often say the pig is very attracted to eating stool. And the human being is very attracted to eating. Prabhupada would give the example of sweet rice. And if you give the pig sweet rice, he would actually prefer the stool. And if you give the human the stool, obviously prefers the sweet rice. But so it's just different tastes. The enjoyment the pig is getting, the enjoyment we're getting. I mean, hate to be so gross like that, but it's a fact. The facts of life. Okay, next verse, Najayate Mriyate, very famous verse. Vakadachin Nayam Bhutva Bhaktava Na Bhuyaha Jo Nitya Shashvato Yam Purano Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire. Extremely famous verse. This is one of the first verses I learned, in addition to Dehino Svenyata Dehe Akumaram Jovanam Jara. So, never. Jayate takes birth, Mriyate dies. Va either, kadachit, at any time, past, present, or future. Never. I am this, bhutva, having come into being. Bhavita will come to be. Va or not. Bhuya, or is again coming to be. Aja, unborn. Nitya, eternal. Shashvata, permanent. I am this. Purana, the oldest. Never. Hanyate is killed. Hanyamane, being killed. Shirire, the body. And you notice Krishna's just reiterating himself again and again and again. He never comes into being. He's always at any time. He never dies. He has never come into being. He never ceased to be. He is unborn, aja. He's the eternal. You know, these are almost repetitive terms. Shashvataha, permanent, purana, the oldest, Nahanyate is not killed, Hanyamane doesn't kill. For the soul, there's neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. Because we're so dull, you got to repeat this. He's eternal, has not come into being, will not come into being, will never come into being. Don't worry, he's eternal. He's not slain. He is unborn. There's another one. He's eternal. There's eternal, ever-existing. And again, ever-existing. Primeval. You know, that's really old in the beginning. He's not slain when the body is slain. hopefully you've gotten it by this point. The soul is eternal. So Prabhupada explains that qualitatively, the small atomic fragmental part of the Supreme Spirit is one with the Supreme One in quality. He undergoes no changes like the body. Sometimes the soul is called the steady or kutashta. The body is subject to six kinds of transformations. It takes its birth from the womb of the mother's body. I'm sure you all have pictures of yourself as a little baby. I don't have pictures. My mother has pictures, and she's given it to some of my disciples who put it on their altar or something, you know. And they think that this little baby gurgling is experiencing spiritual ecstasy. So the soul remains for some time, grows, produces some effects. Effects means children at that particular point, you know, byproducts. Gradually dwindles and at last vanishes into oblivion. The soul, however, does not go through such changes. The soul is not born, but because he takes on a material body, the body takes its birth. The soul does not take birth there, and the soul does not die. Anything which has birth also has death. And because the soul has no birth, he therefore has no past, present, or future. He is eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. In other words, whatever we're going through is not ours. We're just in a virtual reality, basically. We're not here. We're experiencing it as if we were here. Because we're connected through the agency of Krishna's illusory energy. But the soul cannot touch matter. I cannot touch this body. Yes, the finger is touching the body, but I cannot touch the body because I'm spiritual. Spirit cannot come in contact with matter. That's a hard one. Don't tell that to your psychiatrist that you are not your body, because you will be put away in an institution. If you say, I'm not the body, I can't touch anything, I'm not here. This is a philosophical, practical, spiritual understanding. Don't try to analyze it psychologically. His eternal, ever-existing primeval, that is, there's no trace in history of his coming into being. Under the impression of the body, we seek the history of birth, etc., of the soul. That's really interesting. So, like in the body, let me unpack that. Because we want to find out who our soul is, we take that as trying to find out about the body. I mean, how many of us are attracted to having our DNA analyzed? You know, our roots, our family tree. Oh, I have some ancestors from Iceland. I have some ancestors from Africa. I have some ancestors from Russia. Wow. That's far up. No. This has to do with the body. I mean, it's just like when I was young. Believe it or not. We had a dog. I mean, that's not something unbelievable in America. But that dog was a pedigreed dog. A pedigreed dog means a dog where you can trace out his ancestors. So when we got that dog, it was actually a Chihuahua. It's a little tiny dog. So when we got that dog, the dog came with a whole list of his pedigree. It said, once... Actually, they called, I think, the mother, the dam, and the father was the sire. That's actually a funny expression, sire. That's actually an English word, you know, a respectable term for someone who's respectable, sire. I mean, sire of a mansion or something like that. So you had this whole history back many, many years ago in recorded history. This dog got married with that dog, and they gave birth to that dog, who got married to that dog, and that dog got married to that dog, who also came from this history. So you have this whole tree of a family history. I mean, it's really interesting. Well, if you're into dogs. And all the way down to present Bow Wow. Wow. That's my dog. He's pedigree. So we were thinking the same way, you know, that, you know, I'm pedigree, I want to see my family history, and we spend so much money, take a little swab from our cheek, send it in for a DNA analysis, and we find out the good news or the bad news. That you are part Neanderthal, Prabhu. So, uh-oh. Of course, I never did it, so don't worry. So we want to find out the history of the body because we're interested, because we're ultimately interested in the history of the soul. The soul does not at any time become old as the body does. The so-called old man therefore feels himself to be in the same spirit as his childhood or youth. Yes, it is a fact. I can verify that statement personally. The changes of the body do not affect the soul. The soul does not deteriorate like a tree, nor anything material. The soul has no byproduct either. The byproducts of the body, namely children, are also different individual souls, and owing to the body, they appear as children of a particular man or woman. In other words, they're individuals. And for some time, they float together with me, you know, with my soul, maybe from one lifetime to another. And after a time, like the seaweed, it floats apart. And they take birth in another family, or sometimes they switch in a particular family, and the wife becomes the husband becomes the wife, the children become the parents. So many things. Or they're born in the same village. Like Prabhupada tells the story of a man who was very rich. He left a lot of money to his family, died, and he became a cobbler in the same village. Cobbler means a person who makes shoes with his hands. And his previous family, from his previous birth, came to buy some shoes at his shop. And they were so dissatisfied with the service of the shoes, they beat him with shoes. They didn't recognize it was their father. And there's also the story by Kafka called Metamorphosis, in which a young boy somehow or other gets transformed into a giant cockroach and the family loses interest in him because of the body. So, what is our connection? Our connection is spiritual with each other. Try to remember that. Ultimately, we're just connected with everybody as we are with our particular bodily family. I mean, it's a hard one to swallow that actually I and you have as just as much connection with each other as we have with our mother and father, sister, brother, whatever relationships we have. We're all ultimately connected. We're brothers and sisters, and that's a spiritual vision. Vidyo vinaya sampanni brahmani gopihastini shuni chaiva sampakicha pandita samadarshana. In the Katha Upanishad 1.2.18, we also find a similar passage which reads, same thing, basically, Najayate mrite va vyapaschan, nayam kutaschan na vabhu kaschan, ajo nicha shashvato yam purano, nahanyate hanyamane shivire. The meaning and purport of this verse is the same as in the Bhagavad Gita, but here in this verse there is one special word, vipaschit, which means learned or with knowledge. The soul is full of knowledge, or full always with consciousness. Therefore, consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Even if one does not find the soul within the heart where he is situated, one can still understand the presence of the soul simply by the presence of consciousness. Sometimes we do not find the sun in the sky owing to clouds or for some other reason. But the light of the sun is always there, and we are convinced that it is there for daytime. As soon as there is a little light in the sky early in the morning, we can understand that the sun is in the sky. Similarly, since there is some consciousness in all bodies, whether man or animal, we can understand the presence of the soul. This consciousness of the soul is, however, different from the consciousness of the Supreme, because the Supreme Consciousness is all knowledge, past, present, and future. The consciousness of the individual soul is prone to be forgetful. When he is forgetful of his real nature, he obtains education and enlightenment from the superior lessons of Krishna. But Krishna is not like the forgetful soul. If so, Krishna's teachings of Bhagavad Gita would be useless. There are two kinds of souls, namely the minute particle soul, Anu, Atma, that's us, and the super soul, Vibhu, Atma. This is also confirmed in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.20 in this way. Anoranyan Mahatomahyanat Masya Jantor Nihito Guhayam Tam Akratupashati Vita Shoko Tatu Prasadam Makimanam Atmanaha. But the Super Soul and Paramatman, the atomic soul, Jivatma, are situated on the same tree of the body, within the same heart of the living being. That means we have two souls. Krishna's right there, and we are right there, but not materially situated. We're manifesting our presence within this, or from this area of the body. We are not actually just swimming in the blood. And it's not that if you take my heart out and you put another heart in, I'm getting a different soul. It's just the energy emanates from that area. And only one who has become free from all material desires as well as lamentations can, by the grace of the Supreme, understand the glories of the soul. Krishna is the fountainhead of the super soul also, as will be disclosed in the following chapters. And Arjuna is the atomic soul. Arjuna represents the atomic soul, us. He's like every man, taking our position and asking these different questions. And Krishna expands as the super soul. Arjuna is the atomic soul, forgetful of his real nature. Therefore, he requires to be enlightened by Krishna or by his bona fide representative, the spiritual master. Nice. Text 21. Veda vinachinam nicham yahinam ajamavyayam katamsa purusha parta kam gattai atihantikam. Veda knows avinashinam, indestructible, nicham, always existing, ya, one who, enam, this the soul, ajam, unborn, avyayam, immutable, katam, how, sa, that, purusha, person, partha, o partha, Arjuna, kam, whom, gatayati, causes to hurt, hunti, kills, kam, whom. Translation, o partha, that means Arjuna, of course. How can a person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, unborn, and immutable, kill anyone or cause anyone to kill? So, Srila Prabhupada explains, everything has its proper utility, and a man who is situated in complete knowledge knows how and where to apply a thing for its proper utility. Similarly, violence also has its utility, and how to apply violence rests with a person in knowledge. So, generally, yes, we are against any form of violence. However, to protect someone, we would employ violence. Like if any of you were attacked, I would actually become violent to protect you as much as necessary, not more than necessary. You know, it's a misunderstanding to think that we should just sit back and allow someone to be attacked or someone to be hurt or society to be ruined. We should actually utilize the means proper, and violence per se is not supposed to be used except in emergency circumstances, not any other time, and only under the direction of the law, following the Dharma. You know, like if a policeman in the execution of his duty and he's acting properly has to use some violence to protect an innocent person, that's under the law. We do not break the law. We stick to the law of a particular country. It's very important. Devotees should always be law-abiding and not speed either. When we drive the car, we should stay within speed limits. So that's a devotee, Prabhupada said, is a perfect gentleman and lady. That's how we know, or one knows, that the person is a devotee. Although the justice of the peace awards capital punishment, here's Prabhupada's example, to a person condemned for murder, the justice of the peace cannot be blamed because he orders violence to another person according to the codes of justice. In the Manusangita, the law book for mankind, it is supported that a murderer should be condemned to death so that in his next life he will not have to suffer for the great sin he has committed. Therefore, the king's punishment of hanging a murderer is actually beneficial for the murderer and for society. Similarly, when Krishna orders fighting, it must be concluded that violence is for supreme justice and that Arjuna should follow the instruction, knowing well that such violence committed in the act of fighting for Krishna is not violence at all, because at any rate the man, or rather the soul, cannot be killed. So for administration of justice, so-called violence is permitted. I mean, just like what the Americans did in World War II to protect Europe, and World War I to protect Europe. And there's violence, but it was absolutely necessary, or else we would all be speaking German right now, unfortunately. A surgical operation is not meant to kill the patient, but to cure him. Therefore, the fighting to be executed by Arjuna, the instruction of Krishna, is with full knowledge that there is no possibility of sinful reaction. So text 22. Another text about the body and changing bodies. Vasamsi jirnani atavihaya namani nigrinati naroparani tatashirirani vihaya jirnani anyani sanyati navani dehi vasamsi garments. Jirnani, old and worn out, yata, just as, vihaya, giving up, navani, new garments, grinati, does accept, nadaha, a man, aparani, others, tata, in the same way, shirtirani, bodies, vihaya, giving up, jirnani, old and useless, anyani, different, sangyati, verily accepts, navani, new sets, dehi, the embodied. As a person puts on new garments, giving up the old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Reincarnation, obviously. Purport, change of body by the atomic individual soul, that's us, is an accepted fact. Even the modern scientists who do not believe in the existence of the soul, but at the same time cannot explain the source of energy from the heart, have to accept continuous changes of body which appear from childhood to boyhood, and from boyhood to youth, and again from youth to old age. From old age, the change is transferred to another body. This has already been explained in the previous verse. Transference of the atomic individual soul to another body is made possible by the grace of the super soul. The super soul fulfills the desire of the atomic soul as one friend fulfills the desire of another. The Vedas, like Undaka Upanishad, as well as the Shvetasvata Upanishad, compare the soul and the super soul to two friendly birds sitting on the same tree. One of the birds, the individual atomic soul, is eating the fruit of the tree, and the other bird, Krishna, is simply watching his friends, his friend. Of these two birds, although they are the same in quality, one is captivated by the fruits of the material tree, while the other is simply witnessing the activities of his friend. Krishna is the witnessing bird, and Arjuna is the eating bird. Although they are friends, one is still the master, and the other is the servant. Forgetfulness of this relationship, by the atomic soul is the cause of one's changing his position from one tree to another, or from one body to another. In other words, that super soul who is Krishna in the heart arranges the transfer to another body according to your desire. He also arranges your intelligence, what you forget, what you remember. 15th chapter, text 15, talks about this in the Gita. Matakshmriti, Jnanam Povanam Cha, that he situated in the heart, Sarasya, Chaham Ri Sanavishto, and he gives you, according to your desire, what you like. That's something like that book or the movie, The Secret. Like, if you really like something, you get it. Maybe not in the way you wanted it, buddy. Let's say you really like to eat meat. Okay. Here we go, buddy. Tiger, next life. Or if you're really into, you know, a lot of romantic affairs there, then all right. Pigeon, next life. Again, become a pigeon. Anyway, so that's how you fulfill your desires, aren't you? Anyway, your desires get fulfilled in different bodies, but not in the body that you that you would want to have, because your karma doesn't give you that right at that particular point, but your desires do get fulfilled. The jiva soul is struggling very hard in the tree of the material body, but as soon as he agrees to accept the other bird as the supreme spiritual master, as Arjuna agreed to do by voluntarily surrendering to Krishna's instructions, the subordinate bird immediately becomes free from all lamentations. Krishna, I surrender. Both the Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.2 and the Shvetasvatara Upanishad 4.7 confirm this. Samane vrikshe purusho nimagno nishaya sachiti muhiyamana dushtam yada pasyatyanam isham asya mahimanam iti vittishokaha. Although the two birds are in the same tree, the eating bird is fully engrossed with anxiety and moroseness as the enjoyer of the fruits of the tree. But if in some way or other he turns his face to his friend, who is the Lord, and knows his glories, at once the suffering bird becomes free from all anxieties. Krishna, you're with me. You're controlling everything. You're my friend. You're my well-wisher. Bhaktaram jagata prasam sarva loka maheshram suridam sarva bhutanam. Krishna, you're the enjoyer. You're the Lord of all the worlds. You're the proprietor. Ishwara sarvabhutam ridesha arjuna tishati. You're the controller. Wow. Gauranga. Like that. Arjuna has now turned his face towards the eternal friend Krishna and is understanding the Bhagavad Gita from him. And thus, hearing from Krishna, he can understand the supreme glories of the Lord and be free from lamentation. Arjuna is advised herewith by the Lord not to lament for the bodily change of his old grandfather, his teacher. He should rather be happy to kill their bodies in the righteous fight so they may be cleansed at once of all reactions from various bodily activities. One who lays down his life on the sacrificial altar in the proper battlefield is at once cleansed of bodily reactions, promoted to a higher status of life, so there's no cause for Arjuna's lamentation. Now, one thing we should really understand about this battle that's going to take place, it's just between fighters. There's no, like, peripheral damage. In other words, nowadays, of course, if there's fighting, there's so many innocent citizens get hurt, it's in the middle of a city, this is on a battlefield. And these people are Kshatriyas. Now, Kshatriya actually enjoys this sort of stuff. Don't ask me why or how he enjoys, because I am not a Kshatriya by nature. If it was up to me, I would run away from the battlefield and chant Hare Krishna. I'd say, I got to chant my rounds, I got other better things to do, that's it. But that's my nature. But a Kshatriya enjoys that challenge and actually wants to pass away fighting, because then he goes to a higher destination. So it's a very martial thing, a chivalrous type of exchange the Kshatriya is having there. So it's not the same as we're thinking of in terms of wars. And even during these battles, it was during the day, as long as they followed the rules. Because the Mahabharata war, towards the end, they didn't follow the rules. But it was only during the day until the sun set. When the sun set, both sides, sometimes they would meet together and eat, take dinner together and joke and laugh with each other. And then when the sun rose, they'd get back to fighting. So it's a different type of person than we're accustomed to in this world. This is, and as I said, no innocent citizens were affected at all. It was simply the soldiers who were fighting. And of course, the families of the soldiers, obviously, they were affected. But there was no innocent and children or anybody hurt who didn't voluntarily enter the battlefield and enjoy themselves while they were doing that. It was like a challenge. Hate to compare it to football or some, because usually in football people don't get killed, but people do get killed in football. For example, in an American game of football, or soccer, rugby, different countries like that, many people either died playing the game, I hate to say this, or they have brain damage, so by the time they're 30, they die, and they enter into that with full knowledge. It's quite common that when a football player, a professional football player, gets to be about 30 and he's retired from playing football, and he's made a lot of money, obviously, doing that, then he'll have some serious brain damage, and sometimes they go crazy, and there's all sorts of repercussions. And sometimes when the children play football in school, it happens to them too, even if they have a helmet. Still, helmets are sometimes called, I remember when I used to ride a motorcycle, the helmets are called brain buckets. In other words, that's where your brain goes into. So, even in sports, you have these activities, people are really sporting, understanding what they're getting into, play hockey, you probably, it's a good way to lose all your teeth and get dentures very early in life. So, on that happy note, tomorrow we'll continue with text 23. So now we'll take some questions. So let me open it up. Hold on a second, you're all closed down right now. I gotta open it up so that Some of you can ask questions. Allow participants to unmute yourselves. Okay, you are now allowed to unmute yourselves. So who wants to ask a question?
Dhanavat Pranam Maharaj. This is Abhiram. One second.
I know. I think I should recognize you by now.
Yeah. Maharaj, I just want to ask you a question. Do the soul having a same kind of, do all individuals having a same kind of characteristic what the other soul is relevant to each other? Like the, as we know, science is that molecules are always having a different type of, characteristics?
All souls have different characteristics. They're, all souls are full of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. But they all, but different souls have different characteristics. So it's not that every soul is attracted to the same thing on the spiritual platform. We mentioned before that we all have an eternal spiritual nature, depending upon the nature of our soul, which is not different from us. So that, you know, souls are different and look differently, act differently, different desires and different things like that, but they're all spiritual. All right?
Thank you very much.
Who else has a question?
Haribol Maharaj, it's Chitraleka from Mexico.
Chitraleka, Hare Krishna. ¿Cómo Hare estás? Krishna.
Muy bien, gracias. Thank you for the class.
Thank you for attending class. So you have a question? Whoops, your internet is some kind of slow.
Well, I just wanted, sorry?
Your internet is slow.
Wow, yes, sorry.
Take off your video, and that way
yes.
I'll be able to...
Is it good now?
That's better now. Okay.
Okay, like that.
Yeah, like that, it's easier to hear you.
Okay, so is it... great. Great. So I was writing down some of the ideas you mentioned.
Okay.
And that Prabhupada said, well, for example, from the fire, Sanatana Dharma would be the heat. And from the human, is it Krishna consciousness? Or did I confuse the idea?
So from the fire comes heat. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So the Dharma of fire, I understand your question now. That is the nature of fire, the inseparable quality. Prabhupada sometimes called dharma an inseparable quality of an object. So the dharma of fire is heat and light. So that's part of another example Prabhupada gave. The dharma of water is liquidity under normal conditions, you know, not cold where it's ice. So the dharma of the soul is to be servant of Krishna. Prabhupada just used those material examples to illustrate the word dharma. The word dharma doesn't mean religion per se. It means the inseparable quality of something.
Okay.
Inseparable quality, the quality of the soul that is naturally part of the soul's constitution, is as servant of Krishna. Jivara Svarupa Hoy Nicha Krishna Das. So just comparing it to the dharma, it's just the material comparison, you know, metaphor.
Okay, yes, thank you, Maharaj. And another question, the other day I was talking to my mom, she's beginning this bhakti path, and she somehow misses her father very much, like she actually wants to, I don't know, to experience somehow the relationship they had. And she told me, like, okay, but when we die, are we actually gonna find these persons that we used to love? I was talking to her about the individuality that we preserve once we come back to the spiritual world. But she was specifically asking, like, okay, am I gonna find my father again, or am I gonna feel him somehow? I don't know. I wasn't able to answer. I felt I don't know, I'm missing some points.
Well, if she's very attached, she could find him in a different body, and she'll be in a different body, and the relationship will be different. I mentioned that if we're very attached to someone in this life, then in the next life, we will have a different position and relationship to them, or maybe a different gender, or maybe even a different species.
Okay.
You know, let's say, I mean, because you're a devotee, your father's going to be a human being in the next life, so yeah, that's for sure. But let's say if you weren't a devotee, hypothetically, that if someone's father or mother became a bird, then the mother or father could join them in the next life and become two birds together. Or the mother can become the father in the next life, and the father, you know, the man could become the woman, the woman could become the man in the next life. But because you're a devotee, your parents will get an opportunity. They're liberated, actually. And your parents will get the opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness in the next life. And if they really desire to be with each other, yes, they can be with each other. But how and what and when, that's up to Krishna. But as devotees, all of us, if we continue the Krishna conscious process, we will be together eternally, but in different bodies. I assure you that I don't look like this in the spiritual world.
Okay.
That would be terrible. I definitely don't want to go back to spiritual world like this. So
thank you, Maharaj.
Don't look like that in the spiritual world either, okay?
Okay, thank you. Repeat my obeisances.
Okay, next question.
No,
Gurudev. Oh, Nalini Kant, you're not working.
No, Gurudev.
Sunday today.
Sunday.
Sunday? But people are getting sick every day. You're a doctor.
Gurudev, irrespective of karma, because of the attachment, they can go into same species.
Yes. They can go in the same species. Or they may be in different species, let's say, I mean, of course, you and Radha Padma are devotees. let's say you weren't devotees and you were very attached to each other. She could be a very rich man in her next life and you could be her dog or something like that.
Okay.
And she could be walking you around on a leash, you know. A pedigreed dog.
Not on the Mangri Street.
Yeah. So, yes, sometimes that happens. But if you're a devotee, you're assured a human birth in the next life, or a family member of a devotee, you're assured a human birth. So, yeah. Better keep chanting.
Okay, Guru.
Guru Maharaj, Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, please accept my respectful obeisances. I wanted to just clarify this because while I was, I ended up deducing this that at this moment, soul must be in a very depressive situation because it can't really touch stuff. For example, when you said, I cannot touch my body. Or at the same time, we have that understanding that soul is full of knowledge and soul is ever blissful. Then how the soul inside this body being caged in the body is blissful? And
well, right now, we're under illusion that we can touch something or we're in touch with something. I mean, it's just like sometimes someone will look at a mannequin and get very attracted to a mannequin. You know what a mannequin is?
Yes.
You know, one of those little dolls on the store window, you know, very attractive mannequin. So it's the same thing. You know, the mannequin's not a person. It's just a stupid piece of plastic like that. So we, you know, it's just attachment. Attachment causes us to believe in something that's not true. I mean, yeah, I mean, if you're attached to something, you can actually even see something that's not real. I mean, hypnotists understand this point, that if they can get your mind in a certain state, you know, hypnotic trance, they can get you to see something that's not there or not see something that is there. So it's the mind that actually interprets these things. So by the mind's attachment, then we get the so-called pleasures and pains of this world. Even the Buddhists talk about that. I mean, if you talk about Buddha's Four Noble Truths, that the material world is suffering, suffering is due to attachment, give up the attachment and the eliminate the suffering, and the way to do that is the Eightfold Path. So we would accept that as a valid observation, a valid psychological observation in this world, because we're so attached to something. And then we outgrow it. I mean, another example I sometimes use is like a child is very attached. I mean, I'm sure when you were young, you had dolls, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you were probably so attached to these dolls, and you were manipulating the little dolls and saying, oh, here's a little mommy doll, a daddy doll, and baby doll. And now, and if your mother or someone took away the dolls from you, you would cry, wouldn't you? It's a little fit. So, but now, if I give you a doll, you'll say, what kind of gift is that, Gurudev? A doll? You know, what do you think I am? So in other words, you've outgrown something that was just extremely important to you before. So as you mature in spiritual life, things that were so important to you before become insignificant or not desirable even. So it's a question of growing up. Like we grow up in this body from boy into youth. You know, I remember so many things that I was attached to when I was young. And now I couldn't care less about them. You know, so many things I ate when I was young. So I remember when I was young, one thing I remember when I was young, my mother would make me, I'm vegetarian. I wasn't a vegetarian, but my favorite food was like maple flavored syrup in the morning. It was called Mapo. And I remember that, and I was very attached to it. You know, now I couldn't care less. So I've grown up a little bit. So, any other questions from anybody before we end? Yeah. Hey, another question.
Gurudev, you were explaining harmoniotics, and you mentioned dehinosmin yatha dehi. Krishna is using anuman. So Bhagavad Gita is shabdik or
That's not anuman. Krishna is using an analogy or a metaphor. That's a type of a pramana. It's just a way. It's not to prove something. It's to help you understand something.
Okay.
See, Krishna can use anuman sometimes, and Krishna can use analogy, which are two of the methods of what's called Vedic pramanas, or standards of proof. Krishna does use those things, but he doesn't use them as a proof. He uses it to help you understand the point.
Okay.
Because it's not a proof. It's not a proof that you're changing your bodies there. Therefore, you must change your bodies. Yes, upamana. Thank you for telling me that. Comparison or analogy. That's the Sanskrit word for it. Comparison or analogy. That's a type of pramana that is used sometimes as evidence, but really it's not evidence. We don't accept it as evidence. The Shabda is the actual incontrovertible evidence.
Okay.
And so,
thank you very much.
But Krishna and Prabhupada use it to illustrate a point, help us understand it. Just like the sun. Okay. Mm. So Krishna's like the sun, and the energy is like the sunshine, and then there's the sun. I mean, Krishna's like the person who lives on the sun. And then there's the sun glow, which is like the Paramatma, and then there's the sunshine, which is like Krishna's energy, etc., like that. So this is simply an analogy, Upamana, to help us understand the nature of God. It's not a proof. Proof is something different. At least according to Srila Jiva Goswami, it's not a type of proof, it's a type of explanation. We always use these analogies or metaphors to help people understand that you can talk about the weather in terms of analogy. You know, I'm freezing to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so cold, but that's not, I'm not actually dying, it's just, it's freezing. I'm not, don't worry. So, any other questions or comments?
Can I ask you one more question?
We'll let Pranesha ask a question because he has an extra question. Yes, Pranesha?
Okay, no.
Yeah. My question is, like, the connection is the spiritual.
Yeah.
And Pandita Samdarshina, in which the person see the Paramatma in every soul, like equipage.
Yeah.
But how to protect self when the people take advantages?
Oh, that's the same question you asked the other day. We have to function on both levels. You have to be like a schizophrenic person. You have to function on the spiritual level and on the practical material level simultaneously. That's why Krishna says in the Isopanishad, vidya avidya, we have to cultivate knowledge of this material world and function practically for Krishna using the knowledge of this material world. It's not that we should be ignorant. We should take knowledge of this world, understanding it's coming from Krishna. Otherwise, you'll never be successful. Unless you know have knowledge of matter and also spirit and the process of realizing spirit, utilizing matter, then you will not be successful in material life. So I think Abhiram, you had one more question? No, no one else has a question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oh, Hare Krishna.
Accept my humble obeisances.
So what's your question?
My question is, if the material body is the one that's observing the karma, how does this, and the soul doesn't come in contact with the material nature of the body, how is it that you're being punished in a sense, or not punished, but even when you come to Krishna consciousness, you're not able to, you can fall down in a sense, even after all that love that you can feel for him, you can ultimately fall down. How is it that you get another birth or come back as a human being?
Yeah.
Even when it's stated that it's difficult for you to control this, I guess, material body or the senses.
Yeah, so the soul's connection with the material body is like one's connection with a car. You're responsible for how you use the car. You're not the car, but you're responsible. You get a ticket. If the police pulls you on the off the highway and they say you were speeding, you said, no, I wasn't speeding. My car was speeding. You know, that's intelligent. My car was speeding, so give a ticket to my car. Actually, in some countries, they do give a ticket to the car, to the owner of the car. It's actually funny because in Australia, they have speed cameras and they take a picture of the car, and the owner is responsible, whoever's driving. In Germany, it was something very funny one time. They had their speed cameras. So one German decided to put his dog behind the wheel of the car. So he was steering the car from the side. You know, he had his foot to the side, but he actually had his dog's paws, on top of the steering wheel. And so he gets his ticket and comes back in the mail, and it has a picture of his dog. A picture of his dog driving the car. It says, so and so, you have a ticket. And he says, it wasn't me driving, it was my dog. So he didn't want the ticket. At least I think it's funny. Anyways, so the point is, we are operating the body, so we're responsible for what happens with the body. And if we deviate from Krishna consciousness, we're the ones who decide to deviate. It's not that the body made us do it. The body has its impulses, too, you know. But we have the ability to to control the impulses. Krishna's given us all the ability, the intelligence. Krishna says, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent, the strength of the strong, etc., to do all that. Okay, so one more question, and then we will call it a night.
Thank you.
Maharaj, I have one question, if you don't mind. Maharaj, I just want to ask, that when in India, a lot of people doing antim sanskar, whether they are not in the material, they are not in the Krishna consciousness or Krishna consciousness, but they still do the sanskara of the body after leaving the body, after when the soul leaves the body. Well, is it required for the devotees also?
The devotees should do some harinam. That's the antyeshti for a devotee. And there is a different Vaishnava activities that one does as a samskar. The samskars should be followed because the samskars mean basically creating an impression on the subtle body, which helps one connect with Krishna and shape one's subtle body so that one can be Krishna conscious. So it is actually important to do certain samskars. I mean, like, you have Anyeshti, you have Vivaha, that's another samskara. Certain basic samskaras, Arvindan samskara, Namakarana, like that. And these help one focus on Krishna. In other words, these samskaras can be applied in a Krishna conscious way, not in a materialistic way. And they are advocated for devotees. Not that we get into so much all the different Vedic rituals and procedures and stuff like that, but do it properly to keep us connected with Krishna. Because without that, then life is just like hodgepodge. We got to do something to focus. These samskaras help us focus our goal of life. And I think on that happy note, I have to end. So we want to thank you all for joining us. And basically, goodbye. Hasta la vista. Till tomorrow, 1 hour earlier tomorrow. And also at 12 o'clock midday, discussions with Gopi Gita about empathic communication. Hari Bol, Gauranga.
Hare Krishna.